This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Robert Lindsay. Hey, Robert, nice having you on.
Thank you.
And you have a blog. It's called, well, it's called Beyond Highbrow. Can you explain why you call it Beyond Highbrow?
Well, there's lowbrow, there's middlebrow, and there's highbrow. Lowbrow is sort of like NASCAR. Middlebrow is like middle class suburbia. Highbrow is like opera and intellectuals. And there's beyond highbrow.
And I like how you have it, like, I like your parody of Fox News. How's it go? You say, I distort, you deride.
Yeah, I distort, you deride.
That's right. Yeah, I like that. And I think a good way to kind of sum up your ideology, and we've talked about this in our past interviews, is a good way to summarize you is, do you know the Woody Allen joke where Woody Allen says that I don't want to be a member of any club that would accept me as a member?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah,
that kind of summarizes your blog.
Yeah, we're not a part of anything, and the movements that I tried to start completely failed because liberal race realism, it completely failed because it's too sui generis and nobody wants to join it, basically.
And yeah, the reason I said that, and obviously the mainstream left, they won't touch you with a 10-foot pole.
They hate me. Actually, there are bans on linking to me on a lot of left-wing sites. And the sites that don't have bans, a lot of times they'll link to me, and then very quickly the thread will just be shut down and locked. So they just won't have anything to do with me at all. And I've had some real left-wing friends, and they just completely quit speaking to me and ran me out of their lives. Because
what?
I was a reactionary. They said I was a reactionary, and another one said I was a fascist. So, I mean, that's what I am to them. I'm a racist, I'm a reactionary, and I'm a fascist. And, you know, all that stuff.
So why do they view you that way?
Well, the one guy called me a fascist because I was against the illegals. And the other guy called me I just don't go along with the PC crowd. I mean, I'm a left winger that rejects PC. And, the one guy was a communist and, he doesn't like that I reject PC and I reject critical race theory and I reject radical feminism and all that. And he doesn't like that. He said you're a reactionary.
And, you live in a town, in central California called Madera. What is it? What's it like up there?
Sort of like Mexico. I mean, it's 67% Hispanic right now, and it's 27% white, so there's still a significant white presence here, but 4% black.
Yeah, it's a little, so you're saying it's not quite one of those towns like Mendota.
Oh, that's really bad. That's like 100%. It's 100% Hispanic, and it's so Hispanic that the Hispanics are leaving.
Yeah.
Because when towns get like 99% Hispanic, they're, I call them Hispanic wrecked. They're Hispanic wrecked.
Or places that are like 50-50, a place like that can kind of function.
Well, even this town can function, and the Hispanics like it, but once it gets like 100% Hispanic, even the Hispanics leave, they're like, we're out of here, this place blows. You know? I mean, they left Mexico. They didn't leave Mexico to come to Mexico. You know? Because once it gets like 99, 100% Hispanic, the towns just really start to get really lousy. The Hispanic towns need some white people in them to kind of make them a decent place to live.
And talk is probably why those leftist sites ban you.
Yeah, well, a certain amount of a white population and Hispanic, majority Hispanic city is good for the city, like this city, Madera here. 27% whites, and this city has not completely gone downhill, and it's because of the whites.
What would you consider like your ideal town?
I'm not really sure. You know, this town I don't really relate to. It's just too Hispanic, but I was living in a white town up in the Sierras for,
Oakhurst, yeah.
Yeah, I was living up there for about, I lived there for 18 years and I didn't really like it. It's all white and, it's just, they're reactionary and they're right wing and they're really uptight and they're tense and they're puritanical and they're religious, they're Christian fundamentalists and, they're all just Fox News types and,
was that the place where they kicked you out of the pizza place or the coffee shop?
Yeah, they said I was looking at young women or something like that.
Yeah, we'll get to that topic
what's
later.
What's so unusual about that? Everybody looks at young women.
So you're saying they're puritanical. Do you get
I've been looking at young women my whole life, but I had gotten to an age where after age 47, you can't really look at them anymore, you see? So I just kept on looking at them like I'd always done all through my whole life. But I didn't realize that I was into the old man age. Once you get past age, with me it was age 47. Once you get past age 47, you just can't look at those young women anymore like you've been doing your whole life. You're now like an old man and you're a pervert or whatever and you gotta kinda watch it around.
And we'll get to some of that stuff later on. I think a good way to get started would be to talk about, you have a lot of articles in the tech industry.
Yes, yeah.
And, we'll get to these articles, but one of the things we've talked about the tech industry in some of our past interviews we've done a while back are, the H-1B visas, or you have your own nickname for those.
Oh, Hindu 1Bs.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you see, the corporations, what they've done is they've imported these Indians, and these Indians are waging a racial war against white people, against white programmers. It's a race war. They're waging race war against white programmers, and the Indian programmers, these job thieves, these scabs, these crooks, they have wiped out the white computer programmers in America, and they've made them all unemployed, and they've replaced them with Indians. And the corporations have done this. The corporations have stuck a dagger in the heart of the white man in America. And I don't know why all these white people, all these white nationalists, I don't know why they love corporations so much. I don't know why they love the Republican Party. I mean, they all act like
I don't think that's true. I mean, you post the site. I mean, I can't speak for all of it. I think all of it, but Countercurrents at least is very anti-corporate.
If you go over to American Renaissance, it's all just corporations. Go, 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 go. Money, money, money. Capitalism. Socialism is evil. Socialists are evil.
Yeah, American Renaissance are kind of
idiots.
Like, they're kind of like the Tea Party.
Yeah, why should white people kiss up to these corporations? These corporations are anti-white. That's the truth.
But do you remember that article you put link to from Countercurrents by Alex Stark, no relation, titled "We Are Not Conservatives"?
No, I didn't get a chance to read that actually.
Oh, you linked to it, but anyway, he was just saying on Countercurrents how they have to kind of totally reject conservatism and our right-wing economics.
Conservatism is bad for white people. The way conservatism is now, corporate conservatism is bad for whites. The sooner these white idiots get it through their head, the better. There's a site called, run by white, mostly white, yeah, all white computer programmers, and it's all about the H-1Bs, and the H-1Bs have just destroyed their lives, and it's just destroyed the whole industry, and it's just a real nightmare. You know, it's just real destruction of an entire industry.
And you have this article, how Bill Gates forces you to buy buy and use his crap.
Yeah.
Can you explain how he does that?
He has a monopoly, and you have to use his stuff. You're forced to use it because you have to run Windows, because all the programs you need to use only run on Windows.
And they kind of suck. They do suck, yeah.
What, Windows? I'd rather not run Windows. I don't even want to run Windows. I hate Bill Gates.
Well,
I hate Microsoft.
Yeah, Word is the one. I think Microsoft Word kind of sucks.
Well, you know, you have to run Word because everybody sends you Word documents. I mean, all word processing documents now are running Word. So even if you hate Word, you hate Bill Gates, you hate Microsoft, you got to run Word. You got to go buy his program. You know, he's forcing you to buy his stuff. He's forcing you to buy his stuff.
Yeah, and I know you use Facebook. I know you're on Facebook, and you, what is the name of that I saw that page you liked, that page, was it called Mark Fuckerberg?
Yeah, I'm not sure if we can use that word on here, but
we can, you go ahead.
Yeah, I don't like him at all. He's really bad, you know. His site has gone completely downhill ever since they took it public. It just doesn't even work at all. I think he doesn't care. He doesn't upgrade it. He doesn't fix it. Things break on that site, and they just stay broken for a long time, and it seems like they don't fix them, and there's no way to report that something's broken. And there's no real way to report, like, there's scammers on there, and there's like cam whores on there and criminals on there and stuff like that. And there's no real way. I've tried to report them, but there's no real way to report them. And another thing they're doing is they're banning people from sending too many friend requests.
Yeah, I've gotten that. Not only will they ban you, they'll actually eventually they could shut down your account completely.
Right, and it's just totally crazy. And there's a site on there that says Facebook bans friend requests or something. And it's all the people who've been thrown in jail by Facebook for sending out too many friend requests or something. And
yeah, so what is your experience?
I've been banned like 10 or 15 times, I think. All that is an algorithm. They wrote that algorithm, and it's designed to stop spammers, because spammers were apparently going on Facebook and sending out thousands of friend requests or whatever. And now Facebook says you can only send a friend request to someone you know in real life. Well, why is that? Why do I have to know them in MeetSpace? Why can't I just know them on the internet? Basically, they're just, most of the people who are being banned on this are just good people, and they're trying to add their friends.
It's hypocritical because it's sort of like you have the people you meet in real life, but the internet is kind of, a little bit of about it is keeping in touch with people you know in real life, but a lot of it is about networking, meeting new people. And Facebook is kind of saying, like, they don't want you to meet new people or to network with new people.
Well,
and with you, obviously, I guess with you, your Facebook friends are mostly your fans from your blog.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Right, exactly. Of course. Yeah. And what's wrong with having internet friends? What's wrong with having net friends?
Nothing.
Do all your friends have to be MeetSpace friends? I mean, you know, your net friends are good friends too, you know? I mean,
unless you're like a big local celebrity in Madeira. I don't know if you are.
No, not at all. No. You know, and Facebook sends you those things. It says, hey, wouldn't you like to add all these people? Look at all these people. Why don't you add them? And you go and add those people, and then they'll bust you, and they'll say, you sent too many friend requests. So they're asking you to do something, and then when you do it, they bust you.
Yeah, and I know on Facebook, are you involved in the whole gangster Bolshevik movement?
Not really. I have a lot of worries about them. But I'm a friend of Daryl's, and he got me involved in it. And I'm not really a part of that movement, but I hang out with them online, and I consider them to be my friends. They're pretty funny people, but I don't really like their ideology. Glorify criminals, and I don't really, I'm not into that.
Is it like a satire, or are they dead serious about it?
I'm not sure what they're all about, really. They glorify criminals and mass murderers and serial killers, and stuff like that, and I just that's sort of part of their ideology or something.
I mean, it's like one thing is like because they're not like the guy who runs it. He's not necessarily like he doesn't like Hitler from a racial standpoint, but he said he respects Hitler just for having a high death count.
Yeah, well, see, they've got
stuff like that. Yeah.
Antisocial mindset. They've got a sociopathic mindset. There's one guy on there who spends a lot of his time writing to criminals in prisons, especially the most notorious ones of all, and he calls them up all the time, talks to them on the phone, especially killers and serial killers, I guess, stuff like that. Gangsters, he especially likes gangsters, mobsters, mafioso. People like that. I'm just not a prisoner groupie. I don't get into that. I would never make friends with a serial killer or become pen pals with serial killers or whatever. There's people who do that, but
and there's people who think you're kind of they think you're dangerous.
Who says that?
You were saying you get that, or they think you have like serial killer glasses or something.
I don't know. I don't think so. The people said that on my blog, but I don't know. I guess some people think I'm scary. I don't know.
But you don't try to be.
No, not at all. No, I'm not trying to be at all. I don't know why they think I'm scary. I don't know what it's all about. You tell me. You tell me. I've been trying to figure this out for a long time.
So back to the sort of, we were talking about the monopolies, you're talking about Bill Gates, and you have another one, why the cable monopolies suck. Mm-hmm. And in the news, that was in the news, was it the big, you know, you heard about the big merger with Comcast.
Yeah, that's really bad. I mean, this has got to stop. They got to stop this. It's terrible. It's a catastrophe for consumers. We can't have one cable. Well, what are we going to have? WorldCo? We're going to have one company just running everything or something? And we're going to have one cable company? I mean, it's bad enough with these little, there's a monopoly in every town. And every city has their own monopoly. And now the two biggest cable companies are trying to merge? Is that what this is? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the statistics back in the 1980, when cable got started, there were tons of cable companies. And the same with media. I mean, there were many media companies, and now it's down to there's just basically several major media conglomerates.
It's not good. It's not good. It's very, very bad. Media consolidation is bad. Any kind of corporate consolidation is bad. I like competition. Capitalists don't like competition. They lie. Capitalists say, we love competition. No, they don't. They hate competition. Every capitalist hates competition. Every capitalist wants to be a monopolist. Monopolies are bad. Monopolies are bad for workers. They're bad for, they're horrible for consumers, and they're a disaster for society. Why does consumers support monopolies? Monopolies are a catastrophe. They're a disaster. The more competition, the better. If you like capitalism, you need to support competition. If you believe in monopolies, that's not capitalism.
The thing of, I mean, you can make an argument that small scale capitalism works where you with small businesses, but I mean, once you get to larger, once the businesses get too large, then it basically fucks everything up.
Don't you think they start getting evil? I mean, I like my little small businessmen around this town here. There's a lot of competition. They all compete with each other. I walk into the store and they're just kind of like, "What can I do you for?" And you know, I'm here to serve you. And they're just bending over backwards trying to please me and you know,
well,
go to the other places. I tell them, I say, hey, I come here because I don't like your competitors. I think they're a bunch of jerks.
Bending you over backwards trying to please you, that comes off the wrong way.
Well, that's all right. But, you know, they're just, the consumer is God. The customer is God. Whatever the customer wants, we give it to them, you know. What do you want? We're here to satisfy you. We're here to make you happy. We're not here to screw you over. And as businesses get bigger and bigger, they screw the consumer.
Yeah, because there's no competition.
Yeah, and they just get more and more evil too. The small businesses around here, it's hard for me to see how they're evil. Really, I just don't see it. I don't see that they're evil.
Are there?
I don't see there's anything evil about their business. They often treat their workers really, really well. They treat them like their family. You know, as a business gets bigger and bigger, they treat their workers worse and worse. They treat their consumers worse and worse. They treat society worse and worse. They treat the environment worse and worse. See, the small businesses, they don't really treat society bad either because they're an integral part of society. They're a part of our neighborhood.
Yeah, they are rooted in that community. Big corporations, they basically are, they're like rootless cosmopolitans. They have
Right. And they can act horrible and nobody cares. You know, you see these small businessmen around here, they start acting horrible and everybody's gonna start saying, well, hell with them. Look how they're acting. Look at how they're behaving. I mean, don't go there anymore. I mean, we got some Indians run a gas station mini mart up there, about a half a mile, quarter mile away from me, and everybody hates them because they're mean. They're mean and rude, and everybody knows that, and they hardly get any business, and that's what they deserve.
It's funny you say that. I actually went to this. It was an Indian run motel in Fresno. It was really cheap.
Yeah.
But it was just a. It was really. I mean, I can't. It was so cheap. I can't necessarily complain, but I mean, I go in the morning to get coffee, and they hand me this like cold coffee that was tasted like it was made 5 hours ago. Yeah. And they tell me go put it in a microwave. Mm. But that place was actually a part of a chain.
See, if that was a family-owned business, I'm not sure if they would want to do that. I mean, they just treated you really lousy. You know, and if a family-owned business, that motel would be part of the community. It would be part of the neighborhood right around there. And if word got around that they abused their people who come stay in their accommodations, people are just going to stop going. Small businesses can't afford to be hostile to the community because it's the community that sustains them. They're an integral part of the community. And they're like our neighbors. You know, if your neighbor starts acting bad, everybody shuns him and nobody talks to him and his name is Mud.
And back to the technology stuff, you also have an article about Intel, why Intel sucks. And Intel is also a illegal monopoly as well.
It used to be. I'm not sure if it is anymore. But
you're saying it's no longer a monopoly.
I don't know if they stopped that stuff or not, but they were a monopoly for a long time, especially when that thing called Andy Grove was running there. Whatever that thing is. The thing was called Andy Grove. I don't know if it's human or what. I don't know what it is. I think it's a monster. But this monster called Andy Grove was running the company, and it was definitely a monopoly when that thing was at the helm. I mean, they wouldn't let you, they were forcing you to, you know, it was like, if you carry Intel chips, you can't carry AMD chips either, you know, and if you carry AMD chips, we won't do business with you. You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't punish your customers for selling your competitors' products. You can't do that.
And with Microsoft, you said you can format your drive with registry issues in MS, but you're saying it does take a lot of time.
Why should you have to format your drive in the first place? I know people who run Macs, who run Apple, and they never format their drive. Why should you have to wipe your hard drive? Because your system's too corrupt. How many Linux users wipe their hard drive because their system's too corrupt? It's not normal. Microsoft Windows is garbage. We've all been running garbage all these years. We've been running crap. The whole world's been running crap. How much damage that has done to the economy of the world by running this crap. All those years we could have been running something good. Instead, we're running garbage with all the attendant problems of garbage. We're running an inferior product, a grossly inferior product.
And it's mainly because, as you said before, because they don't have competition.
Yeah, and they force you to use their stuff. The inferior product got a monopoly, an illegal monopoly, and you basically, you had to use it, and you had to buy it, and the inferior product beat all the superior products, and there wasn't really a choice. You either used the inferior product, or you didn't use an operating system. But how many other industries does the inferior product beat the superior product and wipe out does the inferior product wipe out all the superior products and get a monopoly and everybody has to use this inferior junk? That's unique. That's unique. Only in computers, only in computer software does this abomination take place. And all other consumer products, you've got a choice. You've often got a huge choice. And some products are cheap and crappy, and some are more expensive, and they're better, and there are all these competing products, and some are better than others. And if you don't like one, you just go buy another one.
And with the cable monopolies, I mean, the other thing is cable's been getting more and more expensive. That's the other thing. I mean, what is it up to now?
It's $50. You want to watch TV? You got to pay $50 to watch TV. Why should I pay $50 to watch TV? That's absurd. TV used to be free. TV used to be... Remember back when TV was free? TV should be free. It shouldn't cost you anything.
And
it used to be paid for by advertising. Cable, now you have to pay for it. It's still paid by advertising, but you have to pay for it. You see, the cable people originally said, oh, well, we're not going to charge anything I forget what they said. They either said, oh, well, look, we got to charge because we don't carry ads, you know, so we got to charge. Because the old model, TV, you didn't have to pay for it because it was all paid for by ads. It's like the radio. The radio is free, and the reason it's free is because of ads.
So, right? Should you saying there should be legislation saying that should there be legislation saying that cable should be free since the revenue comes from advertisement? Would you support legislation like that?
I suppose if they could make money that way. The whole problem was these capitalist idiots allowed the private businessmen. We allowed the cable companies to dig their own lines in our cities. Those cable lines should have been dug by the state. Should have been dug by the people, by the state.
You're saying it should be a utility.
They should have been dug by the people, by us, by you and me, by the state. The state is the people. And then ran them out. Ran them out to competing cable companies. See? As it is, every single city has a cable monopoly. Now that cable is a monopoly, it's a natural monopoly, and it's a monopoly, why isn't it a regulated monopoly? All natural monopolies are regulated monopolies. Electric power is a regulated monopoly. Natural gas is a regulated monopoly. Water is often a regulated monopoly. See? A telephone. Telephone. Your telephone service, your landline services. A regulated monopoly.
Are you saying that you're okay with regulated monopolies? Or
well, yeah, they're good.
No monopoly.
As long as they really regulate them. Here we have in California, we have something called PG&E, and they do regulate them. They regulate them really well. They're not an evil business or anything like that. I don't even know what they are. I don't know if they're public or private or what, but it's a regulated monopoly, and they're not a evil private corporation or anything like that. They're regulated by the public. And if they want to raise rates on you, they got to go before the commission and say, we want to raise rates and here's why. And the commissioner either says okay or not okay. You know, and with the telephone companies, they used to force them to do all kinds of stuff. They used to force them to give you a free phone and, you know, they used to force them to go out there and fix your phone for free whenever it broke. And they were making tons of money all this time. But recently, they've taken a hands-off approach to the landline companies, and they've become pretty abusive, especially AT&T, which is a truly evil corporation.
And then you have another article called the necessary level of unemployment.
Yes.
And that's one thing is, I guess, because conservatives will usually say that they're against unemployment.
No, they're not.
They're not.
Conservatives love unemployment. There's nothing a conservative hates more than no unemployment. Nothing conservative hates more than full employment. That's a catastrophe for conservatives. That's a disaster.
I mean, that's obviously, that's also why the corporations are for mass immigration.
Right. As a matter of fact, in our society, when unemployment gets too low, the business press starts panicking. You know, Wall Street Journal starts panicking. All the corporate media starts freaking out and panicking. And even, you know, even Time Magazine and Newsweek and the LA Times and all that, and they just start freaking out and screaming and yelling, and Wall Street goes nuts. And they start screaming and yelling and demanding that the Federal Reserve raise interest rates. And Alan Greenspan used to do it. Alan Greenspan, the unemployment got down to 4% under Clinton, and Alan Greenspan almost had a heart attack. He said, the unemployment is too low. This is crazy. This is just a catastrophe. It's a disaster. We got to raise interest rates. So what happens when they raise interest rates is they throw thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Americans out of work, and they raised the unemployment rate because it was too low. And Alan Greenspan raised the unemployment rate. He deliberately raised the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States of America raised the unemployment rate deliberately because it was too low.
I mean, if anything, they would almost rather have massive unemployment with a welfare state than no welfare state and full employment if they had to choose, the corporations.
I don't know. I don't think corporations care about unemployment. What do they care? Who cares? Unemployment.
No, they want. I mean, they like unemployment because it keeps the wages low.
Yeah, I don't think they really care. A lot of Latin American countries, the rich have a lot of money, and some of those countries have like 20, 30, 40% unemployment. I believe Ukraine has 42% unemployment. There are some very, very rich people there, and they're not bothered by the fact that there's 42% unemployment. So what? Who cares? What do they care? It's not affecting them. They don't care about workers. Corporations don't care about workers. Businesses don't care about workers.
No, I mean, of course they don't. And you have this one, the portrait of a billionaire as a monster. And one of your commentators is like going on, not all rich people are unethical. Some become rich because they are unusually talented or genuinely provide something that people need.
Some
and
do.
I can't
some
really,
do.
But I think people who are, but I think there's a difference. I think among people who are moderately rich, but once you get up into like billionaire territory, then it gets.
I know some billionaires that are good people. Inventors. Some inventors are good people. All they did was patent something and they got rich and they just sat back and collected money for the rich.
Yeah, you're right. But would you say, but those people are not, I agree, you're absolutely right that there are people who invent stuff and become billionaires.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't really have anything against them, but sure. Those people, they're the minority. They're not.
The typical billionaire is like Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, Zuckerberg. Exactly.
I mean, there's an example of a billionaire for you. He's a real scumbag. He's a real scumbag. Bill Gates, there's an example of another billionaire. He's a real dog. He's a real piece of crap. What about who's that idiot who ran his TV show? Donald Trump. He's a piece of crap, man. He's not. Is he a good person? Is he a? He's just a dog, man. He's just garbage, you know. He's not even a good. He's just a scumbag. These guys are basically criminals. I mean, they're basically on a moral level. I mean, you walk into your typical prison, and you look at those guys around there, and they look like a bunch of scumbags, right? Well, your typical billionaire, your typical corporate executive, he's on about that level. He's the same kind of person as you see when you go into a prison and look around at those felons in there, those dangerous felons. They're the same people. They're the same. Hello?
And you have this article about, are the rich geniuses brilliant or even intellectual? And that is kind of like what I guess conservatives generally say, is that if they tell people, if you're intelligent and you work really hard, you're going to be rich.
Yeah, that's their big lie. Hey, can we all get rich? Can we all get rich? Can everybody be rich? No.
No.
If everybody was rich, $1 million and $1.79 would buy you a Slurpee at a 7-Eleven. $1 million wouldn't be worth anything. Be worth like a dollar. You see? People are only rich, relatively speaking. Being rich means you have more than everybody else. Can everybody have more than everybody else? Think about it. That's the big lie of the conservatives. That's the big lie of the conservatives, is everybody can be rich. It's a lie.
And you worked as a security guard at a place called Three Arch Bay in Laguna Beach. And was this like in the late 80s?
1989 and 1990.
And this was basically one of the most wealthiest communities in the whole country.
Yeah, it is, as a matter of fact. It is one of the wealthiest communities in the entire United States. That's correct. I didn't really like them all that much, to tell you the truth.
You said you didn't like the people that who live there.
Well, they're pretty lousy, because in California, you cannot own the beach. Okay? The beach is owned by all Californians. We own it. The California Coastal Commission says beaches in California belong to the people. They belong to the state. They belong to the people. And if you, oh, there's all these idiots, these jerks, mostly rich people, they have houses pretty much basically on the beach. You go to Malibu and you can see them. And they say, fine, okay, you guys, you rich jerks, you built houses on the beach. Fine, no problem. But you guys, you do not own that beach. You think it's your private beach, but you do not own it. And you have to provide access.
So what they do is they find ways to block access.
Exactly. Those Three Arch Bay jerks, basically would not allow, we were supposed to stop all non-residents who were trying to go to the beach. And I would not do it.
So you refused to do that?
I refused to do it. Yeah, I let them all go. Because they had that right. Those rich people were trying to break the law. They were trying to make that their own private beach. And it belonged to us. It belonged to you and me. It belonged to the people. That's the people's property. It's not the property of some rich jerk. It belongs to all of us. You, me, and everyone.
Yeah, you talk about IQ and intelligent, and that is not wealth. Intelligence, high IQ alone does not necessarily guarantee wealth. I think that's a major lie.
Yes.
But you talk a lot about the personality types of people who are there. You said they have superb street smarts, excellent social skills, psychological stability.
Right. Yeah.
And a lot of them are simply ruthless.
Yeah.
And then you go on to say, one thing they had in common was extroversion, a positive, optimistic personality, and a love of the sensual life as opposed to the life of the mind.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what they are. That's what those Three Arch Bay people were. They were not intellectuals. Those people were not intellectuals. The rich are not intellectuals. Look at Donald Trump. You think he's an intellectual? What's his IQ? 120? I'd be amazed if he was 120.
What's your IQ?
147. Hasn't done me any good either, and I'm poor.
You're poor, yeah.
I have 147 IQ, and I, for a long time now, I've been making about $12,000 a year. So. And I would love to make money. I've never been able to make money in this world, you know. So, I mean, this IQ has never made me any money. You know, it hasn't done a whole lot of good for me, frankly. I mean, I like it, but mostly just alienates me from other people. And makes it so. Makes it so people can't understand me, and ordinary. It makes it so most normal people just seem like they're boring, and frankly, they seem like they're stupid. And I don't really like that, because I'd rather just that they seem like they're like me. I'm not comfortable walking around the world thinking that 90% of the people I meet are idiots, It doesn't really feel very good. It's cursed. It's a blessing and a curse. You don't necessarily want a high IQ, really. Not that great.
So, what do you mean when you say the life of the mind as opposed to, the life of the mind versus the sensual things in life?
Well, see, the intellectual lives the life of the mind. He's just running around in his head all the time. And what he loves is knowledge and learning and reading and writing and ideas and talking and thinking about things and the world. He doesn't, and some intellectuals, really, like your super intellectuals, like your beyond highbrow types, those are people to whom the life of the mind and running around in your head and reading and thinking about abstract stuff and talking about things is actually essential activity. It's like skiing or sex or a party or a Caribbean cruise or a trip to the jungle. I know a friend of mine used to go. I used to go to the library when I was a young guy. I'd have my mom drop me off at the library, and she dropped me off, and I'd stay there. She'd pick me up like 12 hours later. A university library, preferably, because those are really good, you know. She picked me up 12 hours later, and it was just like I'd be like, "Wow, you're back so soon." It was like she dropped me off 10 minutes ago, because. I mean, to me, it was just like going on vacation. It was like taking a trip through the jungle or something, going on a Caribbean cruise or going on a jungle safari. To me, it's spending 12 hours in a library is the same as going on a safari in Africa or something really exciting like that. I mean, you can go so many places in your head.
And the other thing you mentioned is emotional stability. I think a lot of people with really high IQs, they can be a little bit emotionally unstable.
Well, the thing is, I believe that IQ is associated very strongly with wealth up until about IQ 125. And let me tell you, those Tirach Bay people, they were not that smart. They were not stupid. Most of them were at least average IQ, but I'd be surprised if there were, most of them were not over 125 IQ, no way. I mean, that would probably be about tops. It might have been between 110 and 125, something like that. You see?
It's interesting you say that because the HBD people, do you know the HBD, human biodiversity?
Mm-hmm.
When they talk about, racial differences, they say, they say that some groups are more successful because of their IQ.
Mm-hmm.
They put a very strong emphasis that IQ is everything.
Well, the statistics say that up until about IQ 125, IQ is really strongly associated with wealth. Like, especially like making big money and being like a Donald Trump type, a Bill Gates type or whatever. Those types don't necessarily have really high IQs. As a matter of fact, if you've got a really high IQ, you might find it really hard to be a billionaire. Because people with really high IQs, they just think about everything and they probably just think about it too much. And if you want to be a billionaire, you just got to be like a ruthless sociopath who doesn't really think too much about what he's doing. He's not thinking about things, he's just acting. And, IQ is associated with wealth up until about IQ 125. And then as IQ gets beyond 125 and into the gifted area and into the genius area, the association with wealth starts wearing off, and actually there starts becoming a negative association with wealth. So you'll see like IQ 145, 150, 160. You compare that to people with IQ 125. The people with 160 IQs, they're going to have a lot less money than someone with a 125 IQ.
Have there been statistics to on this?
I believe so, because you see, after you get beyond 125, you get into 130, the 130s, the gifted people, you get into the 140s, those are the geniuses, you know, and then you get way up there into the, you know, 150s and 160s up in the stratosphere, and people just start getting weirder and weirder. I mean, that's all there's to it. I have a genius IQ, and everybody thinks I'm pretty weird, you know, and I can't seem to do anything about it.
How important is extroversion?
Yeah, it's really important. And you see, as IQ climbs higher and higher, those high IQ types just start getting less and less extroverted. And as the IQ goes higher and higher into the 130s, the gifted people, into the 140s, the geniuses, especially way up there into the, you know, get into the 150s, over 160, they start getting more and more introverted and shy. And they just want to live the life of the mind. And some of them are painfully shy, and some of them are even kind of, well, I don't know if they're Asperger's, but they just, I've seen articles on people with very high IQs over like 160 or so. A lot of them were males. A lot of them were broke. They were living alone. They didn't have a whole lot of friends. And a number of them were living in poverty. A lot of people with really high IQs like that just work at a working class job. You know, I think that guy with the world's smartest man, you can see him on YouTube. He's I forget his name, but he has a huge head, which is really interesting. But he's got like 200 IQ or something. He's lived his whole life. He's just like been a bartender in a bar, and he's been a bouncer in a bar, and he drove a taxi cab, and then he's a lumberjack. I mean, this is just kind of typical of these really high IQ types. You know, and a lot of them were not married. They were not married, you know, like the 160 IQ types. They were not married. They were living alone. They weren't making a lot of money. A number of them weren't employed. You know, some were living in poverty. And they were having a hard time with relationships. And a lot of them were not dating and not having sex.
So you call yourself, you have this term, you call yourself Sigma male. But before I get to that, how does this thing we're talking about, IQ and economics, relate to the whole sort of Greek letter system that based on male sexuality? How do those two things relate?
I don't think it relates all that much, really, but you might have a hard time finding really high IQ alphas, I suppose. To be an alpha, high IQ is really going to hurt you if you're a real alpha, because the real pure alpha, he's thinking about two things, what am I doing now? What am I going to do in the future? That's all the alpha is thinking about. And that's essentialist. That is not someone who's living the life of the mind. That's not someone who's running around in their head. That's someone who's living in people who live the life of the senses are not thinkers. They're not deep thinkers. They're not running around in their head all the time. They're just experiencing life. They're extroverts. They live the life of the senses. The things you can touch, see, hear, smell.
Like food.
They're like people.
Sex,
food, people,
or getting
sex,
suntan.
Going on vacation. Those CRH Bay people, they spent most of their time at parties and dinners. And they spent their time around other human beings most of the time. They're always around other people. And just, you know, this, the life of the extrovert is just all revolving around hanging around with other human beings, you know, and you're really high IQ types and you're introverts. They don't really want to hang around with other human beings all the time because, you know, they want to read, and, you know, they want to write. And
yeah,
they want to run around in their heads, and they tend to be introverts anyway.
The problem is most people are actually pretty boring. So with people who are really intelligent, they're going to find the majority of people really boring.
I don't think most people are boring. But if you're really smart, most people are boring because they seem stupid. But if you just have an average IQ, you probably won't find most people boring. And actually, if you really get interested in other human beings, I was like this when I was a young man. I kind of drifted out of the life of the mind and got into the life of the senses there for a while. I just sort of started ignoring the dumbness of a lot of the people that I was hanging around. And I sort of pretend to be dumb myself. I pretend to be like a dumb surfer and stoner, and people are interesting, and it's fun to hang around people all the time. And
were you happier back then?
Maybe, yeah. I went to parties all the time. I'd have like 5 or 10 parties that I would go to, you know, and we'd stop in at one party and hi everybody, and then we'd go to another party and we'd go to another party, or, you know.
It depends. I guess if you're drunk at a party, then then people can be really fun who you would normally find really boring.
Well, I was just into people. I was into people. I was into parties. I was into my friends, hanging out, doing stuff, listening to records. I was into chicks, women, girls, you know, smoking weed and just the whole people thing, hanging out all the time and just hanging out with other human beings and, you know, socializing. And, it's pretty fun. It was pretty fun back then. Other people are interesting. Other people, if you open yourself up to other human beings, they can be pretty interesting. And even people aren't that smart, they can be interesting. A lot of them are funny. A lot of them are really funny.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's people who are actually stupid, but they can be really funny.
Yeah, I had some really funny friends, and I don't know that they might have had a 110 IQ or something like that. I'm not really sure. They weren't geniuses, but they're some of the funniest people I've ever met. And they're just into having a good time. They're just into, it was fun to go hang out with them. It was just a laugh a minute. We'd smoke weed and it was just a laugh a minute, you know, just a blast, man. That's good times. It's fun. And people are interesting. People are interesting. People are always interesting. Even dumb people are interesting. They got something to say, and everybody's got a different life, and life is very interesting, and everybody's lived different lives, and even people aren't that smart. They have some interesting ideas about life, and they've figured out quite a few things, and they're interesting.
So you have this post, so you call yourself a Sigma male. What is that kind of in? Explain to our audience, what is that in reference to?
Well, I don't know. Some people were saying I'm an alpha or something like that.
No way. I mean, no offense, but I met you. You definitely are not.
I'm not an alpha.
No way.
I'm an alpha, yeah. Supposedly I meet some of the criteria for it, but I probably shouldn't discuss that. But anyway, I might be a Sigma. A Sigma is an introverted alpha. And the Sigmas are outsiders. They're permanent outsiders.
The thing about them is they don't give a fuck about a social hierarchy.
Absolutely. They've completely dropped out of the whole social game, and they don't care. They don't care where, you know, cause everybody else is just kind of like, how is everybody standing on the social hierarchy? You know, where am I on the social hierarchy? Who's above me? Who's below me? You know, I gotta climb up. You know, I'm falling down. Oh no, I gotta climb up. The Sigma's just totally dropped out of the game, and he doesn't even care. He doesn't care. He says, I'm not playing. He's the guy.
And they just have a, you're saying they have this attitude, their attitude towards life is just basically that they don't give a fuck.
Pretty much, and they don't bow down before anybody. They don't listen to anybody. They're complete individualists, and everybody obeys alphas, you see. Everybody obeys alphas, everybody looks up to them, everybody kind of worships them. And everybody kind of is afraid of them and just kind of sucks up to them. They're natural leaders and everybody just kind of kisses their asses.
Except Sigmas can come along and tell them to fuck
off. Well, not necessarily, but the Sigma does not show,
but they don't respect them.
For the Alpha. And he doesn't, he doesn't act like, hey Alpha, you're the king of the hill. And wow, I'm subservient to you. Your Sigma just, like laugh at him or something like that, and that's pretty disrespectful because they don't take orders from anybody. No one's their superior. They don't have a boss. They don't have a superior. There's nobody. They don't think anybody's above them.
Could you give an example of a character from a novel or movie who fits that description?
Well. I think a lot of rock stars are probably Sigmas. Sigma's an outsider. They're permanent outsiders. They're outside of society. The hippies, the rock and rollers, the dope people and all that. All those people are kind of Sigmas, really.
And do they sometimes give off a dangerous vibe?
Yeah, they can, yeah. Uh-huh. Sometimes they're, yeah. Possible, but some alphas are pretty dangerous too, you know. I mean, you want to meet a bunch of alphas, go to a prison. Prisons are full of alphas.
Well, couldn't you say, aren't there some omegas that are pretty dangerous too?
Unfortunately, mostly The most dangerous people tend to be extroverts. See, in the United States, we think introverts are dangerous. We think, oh, look at that guy. Oh, he's weird. Oh, the dude who went crazy, they always say, he was very quiet. You know, and we don't like introverts. So the whole thing is, whoa, that dude, he doesn't talk to anybody. He's going to like shoot up the mall or something. The truth is 95% of all crimes, especially violent crimes, are committed by extroverts. Introverts mostly are nice people. They're kind of meek. They're passive. They're kind. They kind of shy away from conflict and all. And with introverts, the energy all goes in. Energy either goes out or goes in. Extroverts push energy out. Introverts push energy in. When you're pushing energy out all the time, you can get pretty aggressive. The introvert takes whatever aggression he's got, if he even has any at all, and he pushes it all in. Introvert has so much energy going into him that he doesn't even really have enough left over to push out enough to hurt somebody.
Well, would you say some of the spree shooters a lot of them are introverts?
No, spree shooters were extroverts. All of them have been extroverts. Cunahan was an extrovert. Starkweather was an extrovert. You gotta be an extrovert to be a spree shooter, but, some of the mass shootings, the mass murderers, some of them were extroverts. The problem is, some of them were introverts. Some introverts are dangerous. That's right. That's true. Angry introverts are dangerous, can be dangerous. Angry introverts.
Like the Virginia Tech shooter, or the guy who, the Aurora, Colorado shooter.
Yeah, but angry extroverts can be dangerous too.
But the thing is, those spree shooters are very small number. I mean, extroverts commit like 99.
Spree shooters, are you talking about mass murderers? Because the Virginia Tech guy was not a spree shooter.
That's what I mean, like Virginia
Tech. Oh, that's not a spree shooter. That's not a spree killer. Spree killer is like Andrew Cunanan. Starkweather. I mean, they run around the United States murdering people, and it's like, catch him. He's running around murdering people. Get him. Where is he now? You know, it's like that.
Or with, let's say, if you look at, I think, like, sexual predators, I mean, they're definitely not introverts.
No!
Predators. They're extroverts, but they're ugly extroverts. They tend to be ugly extroverts.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really mean. I think most introverts, I don't think your average introvert has enough energy left over to run around, raping women and stuff like that, you see. When you're putting that much energy into yourself and putting that, all your energy's gone inward like that, you don't have enough outward energy to put into all that anger that's gonna be necessary to go rape some woman or something like that. So you see, you don't have enough energy left over to do that.
And besides being a Sigma, there's another thing about you. You're not only a Sigma, you're also a teleophile.
Yeah, that's right.
What's the dirt on teleophiles?
Teleophiles are what most people are. Most people are maximally attracted to mature individuals age 16 and up. Most males are teleophiles. They're maximally attracted to mature females age 16 and up. As opposed to an ephebophile who's maximally attracted to teenage girls, age 15 to 19. And then you got your hebephiles, and then you got your pedophiles and all that. You know.
Most guys like 19-year-old girls.
Do you actually think it's normal to prefer 15 to 19-year-old girls over a real woman?
Oh, you're not saying attracted to them, you're saying preference.
Well, all men are turned on by teenage girls, of course they are.
Yeah.
But
so you're saying it's
an ephebophile, that's his preference. It's a teeny bopper, a 15 to 19 year old girl. To me, that's just stupid. It's ridiculous.
So what if they're attracted to both equally? What if they're attracted to the both equally?
Well, men are. You know, attraction kind of maxes out at age 16. And normal males are attracted to all females age 16 and up. And
when does it actually start? The very beginning of attraction.
I hate to say it actually starts at age 7. Normal males do show some slight attraction to females all the way down to age 7. It's just at a very low level. Well, all normal, the only difference between a normal male and a pedophile thinks 7-year-old girl is the ultimate. You know, he's maximally attracted to seven-year-old girls. Your normal male, he's minimally attracted to a 7-year-old girl, you see. It's just a matter of, it's a continuum.
And you were saying, you have a friend, he's a hebephile or a phoebophile?
He's a hebephile, yeah. He prefers, he's maximally attracted to females, age about 12 to 14. Lolitas, that's what he's into. He's not dangerous. He's not gonna do anything to anybody.
I guess we were gonna talk about the, like, those different photographers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Right. I think it's David Hamilton, this one.
Oh, there's Jock Sturgis. Jock Sturgis and David Hamilton.
I've looked at Jock, I think it's Jock Sturgis stuff there that I've looked at. Yeah, they're beautiful photos. He's a great photographer. I guess Hamilton is just as good. They aren't taking pictures of little girls, you know. Those are teenage girls.
Sturgis's, you know, work, most of the photographs, they were of nudists in both, mostly in France, but I think some of them were in Northern California. Some of them are like people of all ages and genders, but there's tends to be a focus on teenage girls.
Yeah, there's some more naked teenage girls, but they're not. It's not pornographic. They're not just spreading their legs. No, I mean, they're just kind of like swimming in a pool in a river or something like that. You know, it's not.
They're natural,
not pornographic, man. Yeah, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful photography. It's beautiful. You got to admit, a naked woman is an object of beauty. A teenage girl is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful creature. It's one of the most beautiful creatures of all God's creation, and a naked teenage girl looks pretty good, and that's the object of beauty also.
But what's interesting is you would think that would be illegal, but it is, because it's classified as art, it's protected under the law.
Yeah, why should it even be illegal in the first place, though? I mean,
it shouldn't be.
A teenage girl is an object of beauty. I mean, if she got her clothes off, as long as it's not pornography. It's an object of beauty. It's like a picture of a waterfall or a great rock formation.
It reminds me of that
redwood tree or something.
I think you had a post a while back about the Brooke Shields movie, what's it called, Pretty Baby.
Yeah. I saw that movie. She's like in the bathtub and she's naked, I guess, and she stands up. And what, is she a whore or something? She works in a whorehouse?
Yeah, she was playing a whore.
She's a 12-year-old whore. Well, okay. Well, you can see her naked, standing. She's naked. She stands up in the bathtub, naked 12-year-old girl. And you know what? It doesn't even turn you on. It doesn't even really turn you on. I'm like, wow, why is this such a controversial, why is everybody so freaked out about this photograph? It's not even a turn on. So it's not even a turn on, so why is everybody so upset about it? I mean, is this supposed to be hating her? Why does this have to be banned? Why do you say no one can look at this? What's going to happen if you look at it? Are you going to develop a hard-on that never goes away or something? I mean, is that dangerous? I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, it's not even a turn-on. Not even a turn-on. What's so bad about it? Why are we so upset about it? I mean, maybe it's exciting if you're a hebephile or a pedophile or something, but most normal guys, what?
What if she was like 15, 15 or 16?
Well, that would look a lot better. Yeah.
Well, she was in a Brooke Shields was in another film, The Blue Lagoon, around a few years later when she was like 15, I think. I think there was nudity in that. Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't understand why everybody's so upset about the Chuck Sturgis stuff. I mean,
well, Jock Sturgis, actually, his work, his studio in San Francisco was raided by the FBI, but what happened is there was a grand jury declined to bring any kind of indictment against him.
then later on in the late 90s, well, I remember those, seeing those books in Barnes & Noble, and this was around the time I was in high school, like around, it must have been maybe around like 2004 or 2003, and there was pressure by like the religious right groups and probably also feminist groups too, to get those books banned from bookstores, but they're on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, the whole argument against this child porn is that, you know, you got pictures of like little girls fucking guys or men or something, and that's like a crime, and it's pretty disturbing too. So we don't want to have that up there because it's like showing a crime. It's like you're hurting her by letting you float around and letting everybody look at it. That's the idea. But if you jock search and snake the girls, who got hurt, man? Who got hurt?
No one. They're perfectly innocent.
Someone did. Well, it is a little bit weird that these guys are so focused on teenage girls. But hey, whatever. I mean, the teenage girls in those photos are older teenage girls. They're like, I don't know, man, 15 or 19, 14. It's not like little girls. They're pretty well. They're pretty well. But why does this guy only take pictures of teenage girls? What the hell's the matter?
Just be honest. Obviously, they have an interest in that subject matter. I think people do need to be honest. What's interesting about those photographers is with Sturgis, his stuff is not posed at all. You just see these groups of girls just lying around like on a beach. There's nothing posed about it.
They
but
look
the Hamilton,
natural. Yeah, they look
David natural. Hamilton's work actually depicts they're more like. I mean, his stuff is totally legal, but what's interesting, his stuff is more done kind of posed. But it's not dirty, the pose is like something, I think it's something you'd see in maybe like one of those old masters paintings, like a Renaissance era painting.
Yeah.
Well, there's this debate about what is art and what is erotica. People say that there's nothing erotic about it because it's art. And on one hand, they're innocent and they're beautiful. There's nothing dirty or sick or perverse about it, but there is something, they are sensual. It would be intellectually dishonest to say
it's not really pornographic. Naked women aren't pornographic, but they are erotic. I mean, if they look good, they got to be pretty and attractive. Not if they're ugly, really. I think this guy's really into teenage girls or something. And to me, that's a little
which
weird.
One?
The guys who are both those guys. It's a little
I'm looking over Wikipedia right now. Apparently, there's another guy, Will McBride, who's like a male version of Sturgis and Hamilton. Have you heard of him?
He's gay, I guess.
Oh, I'm looking over Will McBride's Wikipedia profile. Apparently, he was married to a woman, so I don't. But apparently,
well, he's taking pictures of teenage boys.
What Wikipedia said is he lived in Germany for a long time because he was in the military, and then he did some sex ed books, and then he did this photographic book in like a boarding school, I think, in Germany. But he's probably homosexual, if I would guess, or bisexual.
Well, no kidding, man. Any guys taking pictures of naked boys is gay, man. I mean, no straight man. Terrible. I don't know what to say, but it's a little bit ridiculous to call this hysteria.
So before I wrap up the show, is there anything you'd like to add? To summarize,
I'm sorry, but I didn't get to talk more about the H-1Bs, the Hindu 1Bs and all that.
So Robert Lindsay, thank you for being on.